Okay, and welcome back. Hours number 2 and 3 on tap for you now. And we get to welcome back to the program Jim Oglesby, who has told us some remarkable things. Look over on the right-hand side of Featured Stories. Scroll down until you find Jim Oglesby, and you can listen to the earlier programs with the marvelous computer illustrations Jim has done to illustrate what he was encountering, what he really had to make decisions about a long time ago in the 60s. And they're beautifully portrayed. You get the picture, and when you listen to the story and look at the pictures, you're really right there. Hello, Jim, and welcome back.
Thank you, Jeff. I'm glad to be back.
How have you been?
Oh, it's been thanks for asking. It's been, health-wise, I'm fine. It's been very interesting 2 or 3 days, especially last night, and I'll get into that.
What happened? Well, you want to do that later?
I'll preface it by saying I was listening to you and Bill Tompkins on the show last night.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I listened, and I was totally immersed in what Bill had to share. You know, his experiences and his narrative on that was, what can I say? It was surreal.
I agree. I was right there, too, and I'm in the area, and I knew somebody vaguely that he knew very well, and I tried to reach out to that person today. I haven't heard back yet, but I'm working on it. I know the area he's talking about, and I can well imagine that exact thing happening. There's so much going on, as you know, because of your experiences, but the public doesn't know, and they never will know, and that's not their place, I guess, according to the controllers. But there's so much going on this planet. It is so different than what the mainstream media paints in people's minds, and they just don't want to step out of line. It's not comfortable for many of them. They don't, and they don't have a chance either. But I want you to go to guests on the left-hand side of Rents. Look for Jim Oglesby. Look under his name, Proof of ET Intelligence, Cape Canaveral, Apollo Chronicles, and then below that, look at his illustrations. You want to load those pages up as well and get ready to take this trip with Jim, and we'll do that. So tell me a little bit about your thoughts last night about Bill Tompkins. What he's disclosing on this program is really unprecedented in many ways. It's extraordinary.
Yeah, I was listening, and he had mentioned that the two Nordic females, his quote secretary.
Yeah.
He had mentioned that I don't want to misquote. If he's listening, he can certainly call. He can call in and correct me. But he had mentioned something about. I thought he said that they were involved in three major. I thought he said changes. In the Apollo program?
Two or three. Can't remember. There were several, I believe. I think you're right. I think it was three. Major directional changes in the Apollo program. Like they were going into a cul-de-sac, and all of a sudden they were told to back out and go in a different direction. That's how big they were. They were supposedly, I guess, in their scope. Big.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't, misled in my own thinking. I thought it was due with some technical aspects of the Saturn rocket or something that
well, when we talk about when I spoke about Apollo, I'm including the Saturn V, I'm including the capsule, I'm including the whole program, and there were three. I believe it was three major directional changes in the entire Apollo program that were the result of these two or more Nordic minds who were. Telepathically communicating to not only Bill but other people as well who were in positions to make the changes to make the program work. But that was fascinating. So yes indeed.
I was wondering. I know he said that he was anyway, he was there doing the Apollo 11. He was at Cape Canaveral, I think, doing that, doing the launch.
I'm not being able to pull it right up. No, I do remember something about that.
Yeah. I was wondering if he just happened to be there.
I don't know if it was happenstance or there was another reason. I would suggest it probably was another reason, but I don't know. I can't recall. Too much. Uh-huh. Just 3 hours of fascinating information.
Oh, yeah.
Especially here's don't forget, before we forget, Jim Oglesby's book, Proof of Extraterrestrial Intelligence, the Cape Canaveral Apollo Program Chronicles, paperback.
Excuse me, Jeff. That book, once you post something to the internet, it's there forever. That book has been discontinued, and it's you can't purchase that one anymore.
Well, there are two available used at $69 a piece. So they
really?
Are they are there only on a used basis. But yes, point well taken. Of course, once it's there, it's there. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But go ahead and finish. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, tell us about your new book. So.
Yeah. Have you received it yet?
I got it, and it's downstairs, and I'm upstairs in the studio, and I've got to go down and get it during the break. But I did get it. Thank you.
I was just wondering if you got it, because I was having difficulties getting that book to you, and I your mind can go off in different directions on that. Just stay focused. You'll get it.
Well, I don't see this book in Amazon, and we should be seeing it. You're not selling it through Amazon at this point in time?
Yeah, it should be there. it should be there with the Kindle version also. There should be a color edition. There should be a black and white edition and a Kindle edition in Amazon. It's not there.
I'm doing this again.
Okay.
You're putting your name in, Jim Oglesby, twice, and I'm not seeing it. I wonder if it's been temporarily removed for some reason. How odd.
Yeah, it is odd. It's it's very odd. And
no, they have your Proof of ET Intelligence book, but as I say, only used. And I'm looking for this one. I thought maybe for some reason it had been. Now I'm getting an echo in my ear. All kinds of people listening in here.
Hold on a second. Let's just take a second here. Let me try this.
Sure.
Let me do a quick...
Let me remind all of you that on the right-hand side of Rents.com, you'll go down and you'll find featured stories, and scroll down there until you see Jim's name, and our earlier visits with illustrations are right there for you, and it's a remarkable story.
Let's see here. I'll take a look at that, and I want to find out why it's not up, because it's out. It should be.
Well, it was there last time I looked. Last time you were on, I swear it was. I remember I saw it.
Yeah, it's interesting. Interesting development going on here with that book.
Understand the machinations of Amazon.
Yeah, I will definitely look into that and see what's going on, why it's not up, because it should be. It's been printed, published, posted. I'll see why it's not available. Absolutely.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
Well, let's do this. Let's get back to the story. And see, I think we can probably wrap most of it up tonight. We'll see how it goes. So go to guests, load the illustrations under Jim Oglesby's name, and we will begin the story. Last time, we ended at a very interesting point, and you felt that the visitors, whoever they are, had made their last effort to directly contact you. They did everything but roll out the red carpet and ask you to walk into those woods. I don't blame you for not going, but I know I did ask you, and you said, in a heartbeat, I would go now if I had the chance.
Because it's like a camera. You keep focused on the camera until a picture comes very clear.
Sure.
And that's what happened to me. I mean, because now I know who the guys are. They're either, George Adamke's, part of his group there, and or they're Nordic, so, and, you know, Yeah, I was hoping that I'm gonna say here. Yeah. Anyway, I don't want to go off on that. Yeah, I know it's one of the two, so it's not it's not grave. I don't have to get involved in all of
sure.
that, and it's not reptilians. I know it wouldn't be them. So.
Yeah. Well, you were definitely a contactee, although you didn't have the measure and level of the contact that you might have, but they were still very much involved with you, and you heard your voice, your name, their voice, I guess, or maybe it was your voice, but anyway, you heard your name in your mind, and when you went outside the mobile home that time in our last visit and saw the little recon or scout disc hovering outside the window, looking in, that was just amazing. I'll never forget that.
That disc is I've done some research in George Adamski's book on when he was allegedly on board the mothership, which I do believe that he did have that he was invited on board. He did go, and he went into this scientific lab, and he got to see the disc. That disc is in my situation, actually in any situation, its primary function is to, if they're operating in an area and they're going to, they want to make sure that area is not hostile, to their mission, they'll send those little probes out. At least that's what they did back in that day. Their technology now may have, and back then, I would watch it come down from the sky and then go into the area where the rendezvous, several of those took place. It would scan that whole area, and it was making sure that there was nobody was out into the area that could see what was going to happen, because this was a very, very sensitive a program and mission that they were doing, and they couldn't afford to have anybody in that area seeing this and getting on the phone and calling whatever. And the other function was, if there happened to be someone in an area like I was, and that particular individual in my situation, I had my curiosity antenna up, so they came to me and said, well, we have a mission here, but we have some time, so we'll see what we can do with this youngster here.
Well, that's an interesting way to look at it, and it makes sense. They did have a little time to spend doing something else before they had to get down to business, and they said, let's get in touch with this kid, Oglesby. Seems like a bright guy, and man, they did everything. They reached out to you so many different ways. It's quite a story. It's all in the book as well. And let's go to the pictures here. You want to start there?
You know what? I'm gonna if we can I would like to go back to last night just before we do it and just
absolutely
give you some information.
Sure.
Okay. So I'm sitting now. What I'm about to say is, anyone, including me, I can take a look at what happened as strictly as the interplay of my mind, because of the subject matter, because of what I was listening to last night with Bill Tompkins sharing his experiences. The mind can take information and it can create scenarios that you might think it's coming from somewhere else, but it's really your mind at play. I call it the monkey mind. So I'm sitting there last night. It must have been around 11:30 or so, and I was very, very, very relaxed with a clear mind. And this has happened to me before. It's reason I think this is could have been to ET. So what happened was, I'm sitting here, and then I got a series of very, very, very subtle thought impressions, and fragmented, started to just kind of float into my mind.
What were these fragments part of?
Okay, it came in, like I said, they were thought impressions. They weren't audible voices speaking to me, like, James Oglesby, we're going to give you information here.
Right.
It wasn't that. Like, a very subtle, but I got up on it, and it was just four of our Apollo contingent, two male, two female scientists assigned to the Apollo 6, 7 program. Female scientists said to assist NASA scientists, engineers, only as telepathic advisors if Apollo 6 didn't perform as planned.
Are you saying, hold on, excuse me, are you saying that you think that that thought that you had, that two women scientists, and the key word telepathic and advising, were they possibly what Bill Tompkins was alluding to, the Nordics?
Exactly, and that's what I was thinking, because I thought, well, Bill is, if he's listening to that, he could tune in, and yeah, because they used the word telepathic advisors. It said if Apollo 6 didn't perform as planned, and I thought, well, anyway, I'm sitting here, here's the other thought. Then the other thought. Then I was thinking, my thought came in, and I thought after that, what about Jeff Rentz's, you remember you had, the last time I was on part three, you had asked me if I thought that I had missing time because I was out on the porch for hours that one night.
Oh, 3-4 hours, standing stock still? Yes, I did ask that question.
Stock still, also on the night when my brother had come out, and we were standing stock still in the driveway when those four, which there were probes, came over our head.
Uh-huh.
We were staring in one spot. Well, here's what I got from that. As soon as I thought about you, I was interrupted, and here's what I heard. Here's the thought that came in. No missing time. Induced trance state for extracting data from brain. Intrusive but necessary. Now, like I said, a case could be made that those thought impressions came from my own mind because, you know, of our subject matter. I'm not going to come out and just say that I know for sure that it was ETs, but I thought it was most interesting that that happened, and I was sitting there very relaxed. I wasn't thinking of anything, you know. Yeah. And you can make of that what you will. You know?
Well, that's very interesting, to be sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like I said, that it's always. I have a buddy out in California, and we were back, I guess, 2003, 2004, 2005, when I was having these similar thought impressions, and some nights there would be a very strong glow would come in the room while I was talking to my friend in California. He told me, he said, Jim, don't ever doubt your experiences. You know, so he said, because here's the thing, you doubt your experiences and they may turn to somebody else.
That's a nice piece of advice. I like that. Now, where were you when this glow came in the room? Were you at the trailer?
Yeah, I was sitting in front of the computer like I am now in a very, very distinct, silvery, kind of a goldenish glow just came into the room.
Jim, this was after we stopped in our last visit. This is after the little probe was outside the window. This is subsequent to that?
This was in, the probe in the window was 68. This was, we're talking about, I'd have to go back and look at my documents, 2003, 2004, 2005 era, when I had a series of these that took place while I was on the telephone with my kindred spirit who lives in, you know, California. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Well, excellent.
Yeah.
And then even though they stopped their A-line effort to interact with you, they clearly hadn't forgotten about you and were still interested and still watching and still monitoring you. That's what I'd get from that.
Yeah, and so anyway, let's see. So anyway, we can take that those subtle thoughts with a grain of salt, because they could have been my own, you know, mind induced. I absolutely say that was a good possibility, because mm-hmm. I'd been thinking about that. So that, you know, you got to be real careful with that. I've tried to do that in my books all the way through, is make sure that, you know, anything in there that I thought wasn't actually what I was experiencing visually, you know, not try to go off into that, into that mire, you know.
Mm-hmm. Sure, got it.
Yeah. So okay. Anyway, sure, we can, with that in mind, we can move on to, I want to say right here, now all this knowledge that, gleaned from the totality of the encounters, the communications, the, observations, experiences, and events up and until now, came from, I'm reading some note I took. It came from the following: reflections, observations, telepathic, and direct brain-to-brain transmissions. Okay, good enough. Anyway, okay, why don't we move on to the,
okay, well, we've got illustrations loaded up here, and I hope everybody does. Just go to Guess and look underneath Jim's name and load them up. Don't cheat. Don't look ahead. We're going to start with number one. We're going to go through it. It's a great story, and we'll hear what happened. Now, this, again, goes back to Apollo 6 and 7. This is a prelude to the first real effort to put men on the moon. These are the early stages. And when we come back in a couple minutes, Jim, set the stage for us about Apollo 6 and 7. Where were they on the program? They were using, the big rockets by then to push these loads up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, these are major launches. Anyway, we'll come right back with Jim in just a few minutes. Hold on, and we shall continue.
Bye.
Okay, and let's get right back to it. Jim Oglesby is here tonight, and we have our illustrations loaded up. We're going to start walking through those, as we always do. You're invited to look at the first three appearances by Jim on this program. Wonderful story, great illustrations, lots to talk about. So Apollo 6 and 7, why were these pivotal missions in the program itself, which again was a German rocket program, let's be honest, that's what it was. These were all primarily top German scientists running NASA and the program at the time. Go ahead, Jim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Apollo 6 launched for April 1968. Mission type was a test flight, unmanned, operator NASA. Mission duration 9 hours, 57 minutes, 20 seconds, 3 orbits, rocket Saturn V, SC-502, the launch site, LC-39A. It had all sorts of problems.
The Saturn V?
Yes, all kinds of sorts of problems.
Okay, so, now the Saturn V, again for your listeners, was the enormous rocket that was built from scratch, basically, put together to push the Apollo capsule into orbit and ultimately on its way to the moon. This lift vehicle was, without the Saturn V functioning properly, there was no Apollo program. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, and I thought that that Bill had, you know, per his previous enlightening narratives over the previous two or three weeks, I thought that at one time he had mentioned that the two Nordic ladies were involved, I thought he had said, with that particular rocket. Now, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that. I would certainly like to know if
we'll find out.
Yeah, I would like to know if they were, because if they were, that's going to be very significant.
Frank,
about what happened here.
Frank Chile is listening. Frank will ask Bill about the two Nordic ladies and any involvement at that time with the Saturn V rocket development. Now, you're suggesting this rocket had all kinds of problems. It just takes one, and we have a catastrophe. So tell us more.
Yeah, so now, that went off. That was a test unmanned on 4 April 1968. Now, the first ET contingent that I observed, they arrived at the rendezvous site at the back end of Lake Pickett. It's a beautiful lake near Christmas, Florida. It's about halfway between Orlando and the Kennedy Space Center complex. They arrived on the night of April 6th. It was right after dark, March. I'm getting confused on dates. March 6th.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And they arrived in a cigar-shaped craft. They met with a dark official of sedan. And where did that sedan go? It headed due east to the Cape.
Okay, now, hold on a second.
Yeah.
Okay. The cigar-shaped craft. Are we looking at images yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
But we're gonna come to one. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So a cigar-shaped craft appeared. Did you see this craft, Jim?
Yes, I did, and you're gonna see it in a photo that's gonna be forthcoming. Yes.
Okay. All right. Very good. So you saw this, and it was what time again? Prior to launch, approximately how long?
This was on March 6th. Okay, which would have been March 6th. You're looking at almost a month prior to that launch.
Okay.
Now, let's just say, just for the heck of it, they went on March 1st, so they went on, give any other random date. No. They went over there on March 6th, so they went over there for a specific reason. Now, this was at nighttime when this rendezvous went down, and you've got, humanoid types that look much like us, so they won't have a problem putting on slacks and a Florida Gator shirt and sneakers.
Mm-hmm.
And they can blend right in over there.
Right. Okay.
So it's nighttime now. Common sense and logic says, where did they go?
When you say going over there, you're talking about going over to the Cape.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 7:30, 7:40 at night. Right at the very break of darkness is when that ship came down.
Okay.
Obviously, they couldn't come over there in broad daylight, especially with the mission intensive, you know, which they had in the works.
4 weeks away from launch.
So where did they go? Well, I can speculate and say, well, they took in lodging in the area, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And George Adamski had mentioned this in his books, where he had met two of the ET Nordic/Venusian type beings in the Ambassador Hotel, and I think it was downtown LA back in, I don't know the year, right?
Would have been late 50s, I guess, something like that.
Yeah, I think it was 53. He met him down there, and, you know, he had those hunches.
Yeah.
And two smartly dressed youngsters came in. They were the ETs, and they went outside and went to the parking lot, and there was a dark, I think you say it was a Pontiac sedan.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they got in that, and they went out went out of LA out into the desert, and I think he rode a ship that night. I'm not quite sure.
Well, this is all in his book, his stories.
Yeah, okay. It's in Inside the Spaceships. Yes, in that book.
Did you ever see the picture of George Adamski's weird abdominal scar?
No, I have. No,
that's a real strange one. You want to see that? He once held his shirt up and let someone take a picture of a scar on, I believe it was around his navel area, and it looked like a starburst. It was very strange.
Wow.
Anyway, yeah, so you'll find that picture.
I'll check
it's
it
online.
Out.
Yeah.
Yeah, and these, somewhere in the story, the subject came around, well, if you're here, what do you do for money? Well, these ETs said at the time they were working in L.A. I don't know what they were doing, but they had jobs. Uh-huh. But he said if we were not employed, we always made acquaintances with humans, and we were able to acquire funds if we needed money to get lodging and things like that. So
okay.
Yeah. So anyway, we got a ship over here. It's 7:30, 7:40 at night. You got two ETs. There had to have been at least two, and I'm just guessing. Could have been one, but anyway, they went over to the Space Coast. It's nighttime. Where would they have gone? Because the next rendezvous was on March the 17th, and that was 10 or 11 days later. So they were over there for 11 days.
So your impression is, excuse me, Jim, that they went over to the Cape and they were in some kind of consultation mode with the top Apollo program directors for all that time.
That's your supposition. Yes, exactly. Yeah, at the time, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm speculating that they went over and they took lodging. I mean, and the next day they do like anybody else. They got up, they had some breakfast, and then they went over to KSC. They probably had their own means of acquiring identification. They probably maybe even knew somebody over there. Once again, that's speculation, but they had to get in there somehow.
You bet. Yeah.
Anyway, then there was Apollo 7, and that was launched on October 11, 1968. That was mission type. That was manned flight. And let me go on down here. Now, let's see. So let me go on down here. Now, for that particular, I'll find in a second here.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on here. All right, let me find it.
Again, I want to invite all of you to go listen to the earlier visits with Jim on the program here in the archives. On the right side of the page, they're just fascinating. It's like each time it got better and better. All right, we're looking forward to these pictures tonight, too, so be sure and load the illustrations up.
Yeah. So anyway, Apollo 7 now... They did an engine change. That now they went from the Apollo 6 had a Saturn, I forgot what it was, SA, I think 105 or something, but.
Well, it would have been a Saturn V, but probably an earlier prototype or model of it.
Exactly. You're exactly right. They went back and they got an earlier prototype called the Saturn IB SA-205. There it is.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they installed that. And that was exactly what you said, so which I thought was interesting. And that program was manned. I think it had, one second here, it had...
No problem.
Mission duration was 10 days, 20 hours, 9 minutes, and 3 seconds.
And they orbited the Earth for 10 days. Okay.
163 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Three-man
crew?
Three-man crew, Walter Shishara, Isel, and Walter Cunningham.
Yeah. Wally Shira, Cunningham. Okay,
yeah,
gotcha.
Sure. Yeah. And that particular mission was flawless, absolutely flawless.
So the earlier Saturn performed perfectly on that. That's interesting.
Yes, and you got extra crystals over there, so you can certainly feed that into the mix.
I see. This goes hand in hand with what Bill Tompkins said about the Germans and ETs in the 1930s and 1940s working together to some degree in Germany. So when the German scientists came over here and essentially founded and ran NASA and our entire Apollo program and many, many other programs, they were still connected to these people, apparently. And that's what I think Jim Oglesby is painting a picture of in a larger sense. They were there working together again, helping these Germans that they had worked with before. I wouldn't be surprised at all if that happened, would you?
Yeah, from a Saturn and the spacecraft itself had all kind of problems to a flawless flight.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
To me, you can just read between the lines, you know, they need
help.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
So, let's see. So, I want to jump over here to, let's see. Oh, here we go. I got this from ExoPolitics, an article posted January 29th, 2016. It's been updated since. The article was written by Michael Sala.
Yeah, Michael Sala. He was just on the program last Monday. Yeah, ExoPolitics is his website, right?
Yeah, and this is information I'm thinking is quoted from Bill Tompkins, and he had said here that the U.S. Navy planned to put 10,000 people on the moon in the early 1970s as part of a secret lunar-based program that was to be established through the NASA Apollo program. According to William Tompkins, a top aerospace designer who worked for major NASA corporate contractors during the era, the covert Navy plan came to a crushing end during the Apollo 11 mission when Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin were met by a fleet of menacing extraterrestrial craft. I'd like to key on that a second. Now, during the months of that I was involved over there, during Apollo 6 and Apollo 7, I observed and encountered a cigar craft, circular recon type craft, and that small disc. Now that was in the time frame March, April, May, June, up to September 1968, and October during Apollo 6, Apollo 7.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we go ahead to the Apollo 11 mission, astronauts Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin, they land in the, I forgot what realm they landed near. Here's these menacing extraterrestrial spacecraft, and I think, did he say that those were reptilian?
I don't remember that, but
remember?
It probably was, but I can't recall. I would guess it was.
Yeah, what a contrast. You've got the three craft that I just described, and then a year later, they go to the moon, and here are these craft that aren't not even recognizable compared to the three that had you know.
Right. Well, it's like a whole different group of people were behind them.
Exactly. Exactly. So, anyway, so now if you go down here, I'm going to go to George Adamski's Inside the Spaceships, Chapter 5, with the master, page 90, paragraph 2. And this master says, you know, there are certain groups in your world who have already made claim for property rights and possession of your moon for the purpose of using it as a military base. Many Earth scientists are hoping that in the not-too-distant future they will succeed in building spaceships like ours for interplanetary travel. It is entirely possible that this will be done, but men will not be allowed to remain until they have learned to embrace the all-inclusive life as lived by people of other worlds rather than the selfish personal life as found on Earth today.
Right.
And that just goes right on with the astronauts when they landed there. It's like, you can come up here and grab a few rocks, but you ain't coming to numbers until you learn how to, you know, conform to the...
Exactly, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Take care of your own house before you come up here messing with ours. You're not welcome. A lot of people think that early on the program was instructed that it was to cease and desist at a certain point. All right, you've been here, like you said, you got your rocks. Go home. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And that would explain why the Saturn V, which went through so much work to get it perfected to where they could rely on it, was just scrapped. They just trashed it, tore it apart, tore the launch pad down, supposedly actually destroyed the blueprints from which it was designed and ultimately perfected. I can't prove that, but that's the word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just disappeared. Everything just disappeared. Yeah.
So and why? Anyway, why would it disappear? That's the question people have to ask. Why would it disappear? What would cause something like that? This is an enormous amount of money and time.
Yeah.
And what you're suggesting, what you've painted very clearly, is that it may well have been extraterrestrial involvement and help and assistance that enabled that rocket to perform as well as it did with the Apollo missions that were yet to come. That's very interesting.
Yeah, it's like you said that Bill Tompkins has stated numerous times that this, like you said, reiterated earlier, this was a what was the program? This was a German.
Oh, it was a German scientist program. NASA was all German.
So they were going to make sure that this was
right.
Interestingly done right, and they needed. Intuitive telepathic
right.
assistance to get this right. Their hands had to be guided, you know. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, yeah, absolutely.
So very interesting to be sure. Yeah, your comment about the two Nordics perhaps involved, but we're going to get Bill Tompkins' take on that to you as soon as we can. So yeah.
Okay, great. All right. So then we're back to the, we can come back to the, first photo there, and that's that was on February 18th, 1968. This one, that was that picture was taken from taken from a contact attempt that night, which I had aborted, and so I was I don't think I have to. We saw the picture before, but it's not going to be on these. Yeah, that's just you're just looking at the. The ionization of plasmic effect around the craft. It's just starting to, pull away from the Earth. You know, you can see a little bit of structure. I tried to get just a little. I only put where I could see. There was just a faint outline of structure in the inside of that. Very, very faint. So, yeah, pulled up alongside my car, paralleled it for a while, and then tilted its nose up and just, you know, shot off into the night. Yeah. And the next one?
Okay, so which picture are we at now? Number?
We're on the next one, which is, says ships, outer hull, pewter quality, metallic.
Sure. Now, the first picture, again, is the, it's an enlargement of that last picture showing the cigar-shaped craft nose upward as it was leaving, correct?
Yes. Yeah, this was right after a contact attempt. Yes. Yeah.
All right.
And
Good.
When I was a 27-year-old youngster out there,
yeah.
Not really knowledgeable about any of this, when you see something like that come up alongside your car, I mean, if you saw that out in the middle of the night, it's, you know, cold, it's dark, and you're on a lonely road.
You did, Jim, don't feel guilty. Yeah. You did very, very well with a situation that most people would have run from. I salute you.
Thanks.
And that was in, you have to remember the time, the 60s, and what was going on, and you did great. So you've nothing to be sorry about at all.
Good. Great.
I mean, they may have taken, who knows? You could, as far as you knew, they could have been tricksters, and they could have taken you away, never to be seen again. You just don't know. I thought you did great. So
yeah, and that was my thought. You know, I said that, you know, what if I go to this thing and they just take me away? Nobody will ever know. I'll be gone. You know?
That's exactly right. So I think you really stuck your neck out, going as far as you did, hearing your name pronounced in your own head, finding that thing outside your. The trailer?
Yeah.
My goodness. It's really extraordinary.
Yeah,
all right.
It was tough. Yeah, it was tough. I haven't gotten into how all this was affecting me emotionally and psychologically, you know. I mean, it was really, weighing on me heavily. You know, a lot of sleepless nights, but, I stayed with it. I did. I stayed with it, yeah.
Oh, you certainly did. Now, we're coming up on our top of the hour break, so when we come back, we'll dive into the illustrations with Jim as we continue. Now, the idea that ETs played a crucial role working with, and when I say NASA was all German. I don't mean all German. There certainly were a lot of Americans working there. But the program was run by Dr. Debus, and clearly there were some brilliant German scientists who were, in one case at least, supposedly dead, who were over here through paperclip, and they were keeping a very low profile. But it was a German program, all right? So if they did get further help from the ETs they were supposedly in contact with, according to Bill Tompkins in the 30s and 40s, it wouldn't be a surprise. Not to me. Not at all. Mm-hmm. And so they wanted us to succeed, at least those particular visitors, and that set of circumstances. Now, what happened on the moon may be a different story, and it may be a different group up there. Could have been the reptilians said, all right, get the hell out of here. You've been here, now finish your program and go away. That would answer the question, why we haven't been back. What was the last time we were allegedly there? 1972?
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Yeah, 72, I think, something like that.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, all right, yeah. When we come back, hold on, Jim. We'll pick it up with picture number two, the, again, perfectly drawn illustration for you, graphic depiction of one of two ships that monitored and inspected the nose cone payload of a Minuteman II missile at the Cape. This is on New Year's Eve, morning of 1967. Be right back.